I'm Andrea. Welcome to the Joplin and Andrea podcast.
Well, welcome to the Joplin and Andrea podcast. This is episode 3, where we talk all things faith, family, and fun. Today we are discussing missions. We're going to take a look at all of the missions Andrea and I have did over the course of the years, what we're doing now, and how you can help. We'll be answering the question from one of our listeners concerning baptism and its connection to salvation. And we're going to be sharing with you quarantine cuts and entertainment, something crazy that Andrea has been doing during this coronavirus lockdown. So welcome to the show. Let's get started right away. Andrea, we're going to be discussing missions today. And I want to start first and foremost with the simple question. From your perspective, how would you answer the question, why do we do missions at all?
All right. Well, missions is actually my favorite. I absolutely love missions. Missions can be anywhere. It can be in your town or it can be far away. But today we're talking about the ones that are not here and locally. And so we do missions because we absolutely love people. And we just want to see God be able to work and change and show love and help people. And so that's where my heart is at with missions, and my drive behind it is because I just want to make a difference in the lives of kids and families and those in other countries. What would you say about missions? What is your drive for missions?
Well, I think that missions are an important part of any church. Jesus told his disciples to go and make disciples. And so there's a part of what we do that is going. You know, we go and we do our part to make disciples everywhere. I've had people ask, why don't you reach your own community? Well, that's what we do with our lives. I mean, we planted a church in our own community and have literally reached hundreds of people, maybe thousands, in the 13 years we've been in Derby. We have seen a multitude of people saved. And why do we do missions? Because we want to take the same thing we're doing here and help implement it to a degree in other places. And I think there's something really healthy about not being so focused on building your own little worldly, earthly kingdom, your own church, your own house, your own home, and spending your life and your resources to help other people around the globe. And so for me, that's why I do missions. It's one of the reasons I do missions. I believe it's biblical. I think it's a command. And so we want to talk today about some of the missions that we've done. It all started for us, at least, international missions with Haiti. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about how it started in Haiti? What did we do in Haiti?
The first ministry that we got connected with in Haiti was going over to help an orphanage. And it was incredible just to go over and see what these kids were living in, the conditions, yet seeing their happy little faces and souls when they'd see you. And it was a blessing. We ended up going over and we ended up helping each time that we went in this orphanage, whether it would be one time we ended up building a tarp, covered porch area for them because there was no shade, no trees, no nothing. This was after the earthquake had just devastated the area. And so we helped build a thing like that. We took Christmas gifts over. We take things over to just help them with hygiene. And if there was a need medically, a lot of times we would get those kids seen by a doctor while we were over there. And so that was what the basis of our trip started on, was Haiti and being able to go over and work in the orphanage.
Haiti was a very good starting place for us for missions because we were able to taste a little bit of everything. We were able to see the difficulty of missions, how hard it can be. It's not as easy in other countries to get things rolling and structure like we have here in America. And we were also fairly quickly, introduced to the dangers that can happen in third world countries. Both you and I had some very dangerous things happen in Haiti. Why don't you tell us about your experience?
I had an experience with one of our teams. It was actually the last time that we had ever went over there because we just started feeling like it wasn't safe. But we slept in a compound that was a gated compound, but we were one of the only ones that had electricity at night. And while we were there, it was probably close to maybe 11:30. A friend of mine and I were sleeping on the patio outside because it was just so hot. And while we were out there, we heard gunshots. And we didn't think much of it. I mean, you would hear stuff like that every once in a while, kind of looked at each other and paused. And within a matter of minutes, it was just round after round being shot. And we are the only one with electricity in the area. So all you see is pitch black and gunfire. And we had a team of security that would come with us. They were armed and they slept down below in their vehicles and kept us safe. And they were telling us we needed to get out. Get in and get down. And so her and I quickly woke the rest of the team up, got in the middle of the compound and hid out in the bathroom for probably 20, 30 minutes, but what seemed like hours of just this nonstop rounds of gunfire. And it was scary. It was very scary. We weren't sure. We were questioning whether they were actually coming after us or someone else, but it was definitely a very, very, very tough situation.
One of the most terrifying phone calls I've ever received as a husband would have been about 11:45 p.m. And she had called me to let me know that they were all sheltered together in the bathroom because it was the safest location from gunfire. And that we're talking literally 30 yards from the building, that there was a shootout taking on place outside. And it was like, we can't talk. We're supposed to be quiet. Just pray. And the phone hung up, and waiting for her to call me back. You know, I wanted to call, but for all I knew, the ringer wasn't on silent and they were trying to be quiet, and it was just waiting and praying. And obviously they made it through that. Thank God that nobody ended up harmed.
Thank God.
And then my last time there, I got caught in a riot. It was the last day that I was there. I was headed to the airport. And we just got caught in an all-out riot. Very dangerous situation where our vehicle was getting stormed by people getting ready to throw rocks through the windows. And it was a terrifying event. Some of the people that were with us in the vehicle really began to panic and just cry and scream. And it was a surreal experience. And we had this, there was a... They called it a resistance. And what was going on at the time in Haiti, gas prices had fallen in the United States significantly. I don't know if you maybe remember several years ago, gas hit $4 a gallon in the U.S. And then it went back down to about $2.85 several months later. Well, prices has gone back down, but Haiti's government was still holding them up artificially, you know, superficially high. And their people were protesting. And they were wanting to shut down all travel. And so there was this organized riot with literally thousands of people coming together to shut down travel. It was supposed to start at 10:30 a.m. We left the compound at 6:30 a.m. to try to get out ahead of this so we could get out of Haiti before the riot. And short story is they started shutting roads down long before they said they were going to. We got stuck. We couldn't turn around and go back. It looked like we were trying to defy the protest. And a couple of white Americans that were, you know, it seemed as if we were not respecting their protest. That wasn't the case at all. We were really trying to get out of there early. And it's an amazing story because they called them the leaders of the resistance. And these were the guys that had put this on. Man, it would literally take me 30 minutes of time to tell the whole story, and we just don't have that much time in our podcast. But the short story is we were able to actually communicate with the leaders, the people who founded this. It'd be similar to, you know, Al Sharpton in our culture. If, you know, people might know that name. Somebody like him that was maybe leading some type of organized resistance to try to make a point. But they were gang leaders, and we were able to talk with them and plead our case. By the grace of God, they just believed us. And these leaders, these gang leaders, hopped on our vehicle and literally sheltered us from the crowds. And we would pull up to a blockade of burning tires that they would light on fire and put them across the road so vehicles couldn't get through. We'd come up to a blockade. Everybody that was stationed at that blockade would rush our car like we were about to die. And these leaders of the resistance would jump off the cars, out of the cars. Some of them were riding on the side. We had trucks and they were able to stand on the bars. They would jump off and immediately everybody would recognize who they were. And it was such a surreal experience because they're all speaking a different language and they're yelling at each other and it's loud. And eventually these leaders would point to the tires. Some group of men in that crowd would go into this fire, unbelievably hot, burning tires, and would pull the tires apart so that we could drive through. We would drive through. They would bring the tires back so that the blockade could resume. We had to do this like 3 or 4 times in order to get to the airport. And that was a terrifying experience for me. One of the times that I remembered that, or not really remember, but one of the times I was awakened to the reality that what we're doing is dangerous. And yes. You need to make sure you're supposed to be there and the Lord's telling you to be there if you're going to be doing those type of things. So, hey, we are out of time on this side of the podcast. Don't go anywhere. We're going to continue to discuss missions and finish up this comment or these comments on Haiti on the other side of the break. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
COVID-19 can be stressful, even if you don't get sick. Social distancing, quarantine, isolation. If you're experiencing worry or fear about you or your loved ones, sadness, anger, or frustration about being isolated, stress or guilt about not being able to maintain a normal work schedule, difficulty parenting through this time, or any other emotional or mental changes, the Well Christian Counseling Center is here for you. Our therapists are clinically and biblically centered. For appointments, call 263-2351. That's 263-2351. Or visit us online at thewellccc.com. Welcome back to the second half of our podcast, where we are discussing our missions overseas. We are currently talking about Haiti. Joplin, you want to finish us up here on Haiti?
Yeah, so we made it through, and we got back into the States, and there were a lot of reasons. God knows my heart, and anybody that knows me well knows that it really doesn't matter. If I feel like death is on the table and it's where God's told me to go, I'm willing to lay my life down for that. But the combination of what began to happen there, how dangerous it had become, plus we were looking at the fruit of our labors, God began to lead us into some other forms of ministry. Since then, we've been involved in the Philippines, Honduras, and Juarez, Mexico. And what we're doing in Juarez is also not necessarily the safest place to be. But I want to take some time today specifically to talk about Honduras. It's an incredible mission that we've started there. We've been there now for a little over 2.5 years. You and I made our first trip there in the summer of 2017.
Yes.
And then took our first team and actually began mission work in February of 2018. So just a little over 2 years. Let's talk about that. What is going on in Honduras?
What is going on in Honduras? We have a lot of exciting things. We take a team over every February and every June or July, and the teams look a little different. Our February trip actually helps take backpacks over, and the backpacks are for kids that we sponsor. And Our church currently has about 150 students that we sponsor every single month. They're sponsored by individual people that we help provide $15 a month that ends up helping them go to school. And they can go to the feeding center and they get fed weekly. And they also, if there's any kind of medical attention that they need, we do our best to try to get all their medical attention met as well. But it's really exciting. The February trip takes backpacks over. The backpacks are for them to be able to go to school. The Honduran kids can go to school for free as long as they have a backpack. And so we provide them with backpacks and that February team takes those. And then in June or July, we go and in the past, we've done VBSs and sometimes it's part of the week and other times it's the whole week. And we get to go and interact with the kids, do home visits. There's an opportunity during the week where you can actually go with your own personal child and take them to a pool and spend time with them, eat lunch with them. It's just, it's incredible. It's amazing. This ministry is to just be able to go and get plugged into something that's really healthy, that's making a difference. So that's a little bit about our Honduras ministry.
There are three things about it that really special to me and I guess resonate with my heart and why I think we were led there. I like helping people that otherwise there's just no other way. And the area that we're at in Honduras is a very impoverished area. It's deep into the mountains. And in a lot of ways, they still live very primitive compared to the modern day times that we live in.
Yeah, a lot of them don't even have electricity.
And many of the kids literally will spend, you know, 14 or 15 years on the mountain and never leave a 2 to 3 mile radius, never actually go into a city. And so it's a very different culture. And consequently, when we started there a few years ago, the average age that kids stopped school was about second grade. And the reason for that is once they got barely far enough to sort of learn how to read and write, that was the goal. And the parents could not afford to send their kids to school. Andrea mentioned they need a backpack, but that backpack has to have supplies. It's not just a backpack. They have to, while the school is free, they have to have school uniforms. They have to have shoes. They have to have not only a backpack, but they've got to have school supplies. And on the Honduran side, it costs about $150 US for them to get everything to send their kids to school. But in the area that we are currently in, the average income is like $80 a month. So you're talking 2 months worth of wages for somebody to send their children to school. And this is why about second grade, they just stop. And so the first thing that I saw, there's a real need.
Yes.
That, you know, these kids, there's an actual need here. And helping these children get an education was fantastic. Next, the ability to come in and help these children with very real needs has softened the hearts of their parents. And we run this program out of this little church that is on the mountainside and that is local to this community. And the church has almost doubled in size in the 2 years we've been there.
Yes.
And there is no doubt that it is a huge part of the sponsorship program. These children being sponsored, getting food, getting school, getting the school supplies, getting vitamins. And part of the program requires that the children attend the Sunday Bible program. And what's happened as a result of that is families have been coming, families are being saved. And so I love this program for that reason. And then the third thing that was really important to me, you know, we'd spent 10 years in Haiti and I would do it all over again. But after 10 years, it was difficult to gauge. Here's what we accomplished. I wanted to be somewhere and work with the people that we could build long-time relationships with.
Yes.
Become personal with, know these people by name, and be able to look back over 5, 10, 15, 20 years. I wasn't looking for somewhere to go for a year or two and do something and be gone. I was wanting to long-term we're here to help your community reach people for Christ and to minister to you guys. Well, this was the perfect opportunity for that. And the awesome thing about our program is that all of our students are from the same area, right? So we've got like 150 kids. We get to see all 150 kids every time we go.
Yes.
And so it'd be similar to us showing up to some rural area in Kansas and saying, listen, everybody that wants, we will help your kids go to school. And so they're all from the same community. And when we go, if you sponsor one of our kids and you want to go over with us, you actually get to meet your sponsored student. And it's just a pretty neat program. I love what we're doing there. It has been awesome, and we are just getting started. So maybe our listeners, some of them might be curious exactly, you know, what they can do to help, what they can do to be a part of this. So why don't you speak to that a little bit? If somebody's wanting to sponsor a kid, how can they do that?
Sure. This stuff just gets me really excited because I've had the opportunity to go over and work with these kids personally, work with the ministry team over there, and they're just incredible. The biggest thing that we have with child sponsorship is that we still have students right now that are available for sponsorship for $15 a month. And like I said earlier, that covers their schooling, that covers their feeding at the feeding center. And that helps if there's a need that comes up, it helps with them to try to get connected so that we can get them the help they need. And that you can find information through on our app. You can also look on our website, and we'll post some links here in a little while with some information on our websites that you can check out if you like. And then if you're interested in going on a trip, we absolutely recommend that everybody that can possibly go at least try to go once. It's life-changing to go on a mission trip in the first place. You just go and you realize how good you actually have it. And you stop taking all these huge things that we have that are American problems. and it puts things into perspective that I have hot water every single day and that my kids have food on the table. And so we really encourage you to get information on that if you want to go. We have information on every single trip that comes up through our app. And if you don't have our app and you'd like information, get hold of Joplin or and we'd love to send it to you some other way. But we just encourage you to do that. Get on there and get some information for the trip. And
folks can contact us directly through the website, joplinandandrea.com. And that's one way to get a hold of us. That's probably the easiest. If you're listening and want to know how to get a hold of us directly, just hop on joplinandandrea.com. And there's a link there to comment or send your info to us. Let us know your questions, and we'll get you set up. And if you want to download our church's app, it's just search for the Well Worship Center in any app store. Download the app and you'll see on the very front page of our app a link for child sponsorship. And you'll be able to find the kids that still need sponsors. It's an easy process to get set up, and we would love to have you sponsor one of our kids and be part of our program, and maybe one of these days travel over with us.
Yes, we absolutely would. All right, it's time in our show to answer a question from one of our listeners. Today, the question comes from Madison. And Madison's question is, do you have to be baptized to be saved? And she references the verse in Matthew 16:16.
Mark 16:16. Yeah, Mark 16:16. First of all, let me read the scripture reference. I think that would be helpful. So here is Mark 16:16. In fact, I'm going to back up to verse 11. Afterward, this is after the resurrection of Jesus, he appeared to the 11 themselves as they were reclining at table, and he rebuked them for their unbelief and hardness of heart because they had not believed those who saw him after he had risen. And he said to them, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who believe in my name. They will cast out demons. They will speak in new tongues. They will pick up serpents with their hands. And if they drink any deadly poison, it will not hurt them. They will lay their hands on the sick and they will recover. So these are the final words recorded in Mark 16. Jesus spoke to his disciples before leaving the earth. And her question comes from this statement he made in verse 16, whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. First of all, to answer the question directly, no, you do not have to be baptized in order to be saved. And that's not what this text is teaching. In fact, if you read the last part of the verse, whoever does not believe will be condemned. So we see it's really about believing. And that said, a true believer should be baptized. I think it's impossible to argue that a person truly believes and doesn't want to be baptized. However, you must truly believe. And if a person really believes, they will follow the Lord in water baptism. The reason I think it's important that we understand that baptism doesn't save us is because if you feel that way, if you believe that, you know, you can be led to think that just because you've been baptized, you've been saved. But this isn't true. You can be baptized. My pastor used to say, you can be baptized until the tadpoles know your zip code.
I remember that.
And still split hell wide open. And that's the truth. You have to truly believe. You've got to repent of your sins. Baptism is a symbol of our faith. It is a symbol of the old man going down, the new man coming up. It's a symbol of the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ and us identifying in that. I think it's very difficult to argue that a true Christian, a true believer who has been born again, would not want to be baptized. I don't think that's possible. But they don't become saved when they get baptized. Yeah. They become saved when they believe and turn to the Lord Jesus Christ. And if they were to die before they had the opportunity to get baptized, I am 100% confident that this book, the Bible, teaches us that person would be saved. So that's my answer to that question. That's
very
a good,
good
question. And the last thing we're going to talk about today is quarantine cuts and entertainment. For those of you that follow us on Facebook, you know that my wife has been doing some crazy stuff during this lockdown. Really, she does crazy stuff all the time. It's not just during the lockdown, but it's sort of like it gave her an extra boost. So, Andrea, tell us about quarantine cuts and entertainment. How'd this thing start? Why are you doing it? And what's this all about?
Well, it started because one day we were just sitting around the table, and I say we, me and my kids and a friend of ours, and we just started brainstorming some fun ideas, and we actually do this all the time, but we decided, why not go ahead and give it a go for this time while we're locked down to entertain people live. And so we went ahead and went with it. And quarantine cuts actually all started because Joseph Vasquez said he needed a haircut and was looking for a hair cutter. So I tried to prompt him to let us give him a haircut. And anyway, he did not show up, but a lot of others did. And we had a great time cutting hair live. And since we've did a live segment with the Emberson's version of America's Got Talent. And we have lots of other things up our sleeves too, if we can get them out. And this is all in just fun and entertainment. And we decided to just do it as a fundraiser because our kids absolutely love going to Honduras. They love investing in the kids. They love spending time and going over there and ministering. And so it was just a unique way for them to raise some funds through entertainment.
Yeah, I didn't think it would work. The idea was basically you guys record yourself being crazy like you like to do, and people would donate just to watch you being nuts. And it worked. I didn't think it would. I didn't understand what they were giving to, but it was like they were bored, and it was a good cause, and it was fun. And
you nailed it. It was
the
fun.
Funds are going to support the mission in Honduras. And so kudos to you. Great idea. They talked me into participating twice. Once,
a little shaving cream, you know, on your head.
We had a game where they put shaving cream all over my head and threw eggs at it.
It was Easter.
It was Easter. And there was a moment when the eggs were flying towards me. It felt like a dream when, or if you've ever made a bad decision in the middle of it, you really honestly decide this is a bad decision, but it's too late. I felt that way when I'm sitting there and there were eggs flying at my head, sticking to it, and I knew I was on camera. Everything inside me was like, this was a bad idea, but there was no turning back. And last time was a little more fun. Yep. Yeah, they had me as Howie Mandel as one of the judges last time. That was fun. But keep your eye out for that. It looks like we're going to be part of this lockdown a little bit longer. So there might be another installment of Quarantine Cuts and Entertainment coming up on Facebook later this week. Hey, that's all the time that we have for it. Andrea, you got anything else today?
Nope, that's all I have.
All right, guys, thanks for listening. God bless you, and we'll see you all next time.